order the meeting of the planning committee for this morning. The next item on the agenda is approval of the minutes from the October 3rd meeting. Do I have a motion to approve?
Move for approval, Madam Chairman.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Item number three on the agenda is public comment. If you have a public comment, please come forth to the microphone, the podium. You have 2 minutes and 30 seconds. And when the timer ends, then your time is up, and please respect other speakers. So is there anyone here for public comment?
Good morning. Mary McCosey, 136 Heritage Circle. And I'm here to talk about short-term rentals. I think it's about 8 or 9 months now that we've been working with this new document, trying to streamline it. And I still have a question about the cap. The way the verbiage is written here, it states that those of us that are already permitted, we apply from November to December. And if we do everything the way it's supposed to be, we are considered exempt from the cap. So if we're exempt from the cap, it really means we don't count. And if we don't count, then that means when January comes along, we're starting at zero. So we have those of us that are already permitted, plus 400 more, which seems opposite of how we were trying to do this. So those of us from Stramp sat down a couple of weeks ago with Jane, and we brought this up. And I'm hopeful that the verbiage is going to be addressed so that it doesn't end up this way, because I feel that that's the whole reason that we started this, was the cap, not to tighten up all the rest of the stuff in here, which is, seems to me, what has got us off point from what we were trying to do. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good morning. Brandon Bruce, 264 Alexandra Drive. I'm a member of Strength. Simple solution for the permit fee increase. Take the cost of the program, divide it out by the number of applicants, and there's your cost of your STR permit fees. Thanks.
Thank you.
Good morning. Michelle Whitbeck, 712 Hibbins Grant Boulevard. I'm also here for the short-term rental ordinance. The first thing I wanted to address is the inheritance of the permit for our family members. I brought this up at the last meeting. And as Mary said, we did have a very successful meeting with Jane. And with this first item, I recommend that permit holders be allowed to add names of family members on their permit application who can inherit the permit upon the permit owner's death or with the power of attorney. It would be up to the permit owner to ensure that the deed will transfer smoothly to the family member as well, but there should not be a need for a family member to get on the wait list for that permit. The second item I wanted to address, same as Mary before, is the cap. Please, please read the ordinance the way it's written right now. It does need to be addressed so that the cap issue is done effectively. I recommend some verbiage be changed regarding the current short-term rental owners. It appears to have a contradiction in how the new registration process will work, stating that current permit holders will register early in November and December, and if they meet all the requirements, they may be exempt from the cap. Then it goes on to say that if the cap is not met by the time new registrants apply in January, new permits will be issued until the cap is reached. If the current permit holders are exempt from the cap in the first place, then that means that however many current permit holders there are, which I believe are about 437, would be in addition to the 400 new permits issued in come January. I know they're not going to do that during the process, but it's reading that way. So my recommendation is to just not exempt current permit holders from the cap, include everybody into that cap starting in the new early process. Thank you.
Bill Massey, also with Stramp, here for short-term rentals, of course. Inheritance is a big thing for me. Most of y'all know my story, and I just want my son to have access to the income of the house, which is in our neighborhood, so that when I leave this planet of ours, he'll have that income. The other thing, too, is the bigger picture. we are a leader in short-term rentals. Nobody else is talking about it like we are. I got a call just the other day from a town council member at Folly. They've got fractions now going into it because they didn't take the leadership role we are. So I commend everybody up there. I hope you guys appreciate what we're trying to do communicating-wise. But the whole state of South Carolina is going to be looking at us. I guarantee it. Thank you very much, y'all.
All right. Is there anyone else for public comment?
Eric Benson, 242 6th Avenue. I just want to echo the concerns that have been expressed before. I'm a member of STRAMP, and particularly to address this issue of the verbiage on registration for our permits and for our inheritance, because I certainly want my children to benefit from the work and effort that we've put in. Thank you.
All right. Is there anyone else for public comment? All right. Public comment is now closed. Moving on to item 4 on the agenda, annexations for A 1752 North Highway 17.
Good morning. Thank you, ma'am. So this is a request to annex a property along Highway 17. It is part of the Olive Branch African Methodist Episcopal Church. It is vacant, and it is adjacent to the church, and they would simply like to annex it in. So the church is designated for PI, but it's zoned R1, which is fine, and that's what this parcel would come into. It would come in as R1, which would allow a religious institution or associated uses. And I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Do we have any questions from the committee?
I'll move for approval for discussion purposes.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second for approval. Is there any discussion? Ms. Hyatt, did you have a question?
Is the church itself already in the town?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So the large yellow parcel adjacent, that's where the church is located.
So this is just a parcel that they own.
Correct.
That's being added to.
Correct.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Item B, 3935 Colonel Vanderhoost Circle.
Again, this is a parcel that's currently in the county. It is in Dunes West, which is mostly PD. But you can see over the years there have been parcels that have come in that are zoned R1, and that's what this parcel would come in as well. So it's one of the few remaining parcels sitting out there that's still in the county. So that would also come in as R1.
Move to approve.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion to approve and a second. Is there any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Item number 5, review of Planning Commission recommendations from their October meeting. Item 5A, the Village Park Plan Development.
Okay, this is a proposal. It's got a couple of different pieces. It's a request for a PD zoning. So it would annex into the town, it would get that PD zoning, and then also it met the threshold for an impact assessment and conceptual plan. It is 2 acres, totaling about 9.6 acres. You can see it there in an aerial. It backs up to the point at Primus Tract, which is accessed off of 6 Mile Road. And up top there, you can see Old Georgetown Road.
Ms. Reed, sorry, could you pause and move back there?
Absolutely.
Is that entire, that's a lake, is that correct?
They are both, they're borrow pits is what they are. But yeah, they are very large ponds.
Okay. Thank you.
This is the comprehensive plan map. They are designated for settlement community land uses. And here's the zoning. So you can see Point of Primus came in, it's zoned plan development. We have the R1 for the church, and then the rest is conservation open space. So in the county, these parcels are currently zoned S3, which is their special management district. That allows a density of 3 units an acre. The proposal is to zone it a planned development, so they do not want to come in and be community conservation, which would be what is recommended. These parcels are also in the Sweetgrass, recommended for the Sweetgrass Basket Overlay District, and there's a proposal to remove the overlay district from these parcels. So what is proposed? We'll talk a little bit about the planned development first. So we don't see a lot of new PDs often. A lot of times you're seeing amendments. So just a reminder, a PD replaces the zoning. It creates its own zoning district. It has its own zoning map. and it designates its own uses. So this PD is proposing to come in with 28 townhouse units, which is about 40 units an acre, which isn't much more than what it would be allowed in the county. Approximately 60,000 square foot of commercial space, which would utilize the town's AB2, Area-Wide Business 2 district. Again, removal from the overlay district, the Sweetgrass Basket overlay, and then it would have approximately 20% of open space. You can see here, currently these parcels don't have any access, but once these transportation improvements are completed, it would have direct access off of Von Ed Key Parkway, which is up at the top, and I've sort of just superimposed the proposed development turn so that you can see how it would look. And then it would be placed on the corner of the Billy Swills Boulevard extension as well. So here's the zoning map that would accommodate or accompany the PD. It is, again, townhouse, commercial, and then you have the open space. I want to talk a little bit about the comp plan and what it recommends for this area and why. So it is designated for settlement community land uses. It's also in one of our district area plans, which is the Route 17 district. You can see the arrow there designated for comp plan uses. The primary purpose of these, the 17 community, the Highway 17 district area plan and the settlement community is to protect and recognize the historic development patterns of the African-American community to kind of promote development that is consistent with that. And also the Highway 17 area plan is focused in on transportation projects, and those transportation projects have been in the works for quite some time. And the point of those are really to alleviate congestion, provide alternatives to transportation. They weren't necessarily proposed to create an intense commercial use off of those alternative routes. Real quick, I want to talk about a few things, the impact assessment and the plan development. The four things I want to touch on are the boundary of the village area commercial, which is a designation within the Sweetgrass Basket Overlay District that they would be removed from, in conjunction with the PD standards. Again, that removal from the overlay, the proposed permitted uses, and then the number of lots on a dead-end street. And one of the reasons they need to be removed from the overlay district if they get this zoning is because the Sweetgrass Basket Overlay District in the hierarchy would supersede a plan development. And the plan development through the proposal of AB2 uses and townhouses cannot meet the intent of the Sweetgrass Basket Overlay District. The overlay district designates the commercial area to be 500 feet off of Highway 17, as you see here. Those uses are designated within the ordinance and the overlay district as they should be limited office, so very light office, home-based type uses, maybe a small commercial that would meet the needs of the neighborhood. And you can see here where the proposed development is conjunction with that 500 feet. So that's the purpose of the removal. You can't have the planned development as it's proposed in the Sweetgrass Basket Overlay District. Further, the Sweetgrass Basket Overlay District requires 12,500 square foot lots for residential. This project is proposing townhouses, which would not meet that intent. So that kind of explains the need for the removal in order to meet the plan development standards. Just another quick comparison, the Sweetgrass Basket Overlay, again, it does allow for limited office in that 500 feet. Those are limited in size and hours of operation. The proposal is for AB2 uses, which is more intense outside of that 500 feet. So again, they would not be able to meet that. And this is just kind of a scale of limited office up to our AB2, which is a pretty intense commercial zoning district.
Yes, committee, should we finish the presentation or do you feel comfortable moving?
Almost done. So another comment that staff did have, and just to back up for a second, Planning Commission did recommend denial of the PD, the impact assessment, the conceptual plan, and staff had a few of these concerns. One was the proposed PD has townhouses pretty in close proximity to a proposed AB2 uses, so that could be a pretty intense use next to townhouses. One other thing is our Chapter 155, which controls our land development regulations, states that you can't have more than 25 lots off of a dead-end street. They are showing a proposed connectivity that does not meet their standard of providing connectivity. There's no guarantee. And so that's another issue that staff had. They are proposing 28 units off of that street, whereas Chapter 155 only allows for 25. So that would require two things if this was approved. Either they would have to get a waiver from the Planning Commission, or I know our town engineer said that if they wanted to, they could only plat 25 lots. And then once that interconnectivity was finalized, they could get their three additional lots. So they have a couple of options there. And last, I just wanted to point out that the transportation impact fees were calculated, and this was based on just some proposed, what could go in AB2, what they're proposing, and this is just an estimate of what those transportation impact fees would be. We do have one of our engineers here to talk about stormwater and the ponds if needed, and we also have transportation engineers here to talk about those connections as well. So that's all I have. I'm happy to answer questions.
Move to deny. Second.
We have a motion to deny and a second. Is there any discussion? Does anyone have any?
My only question is, how that looks like wetlands. How can, are they going to, is the plan is to fill those wetlands?
The proposal, and there's already a permit that's been obtained to fill the majority of them, but I know the applicants here and can speak more to that. There was a lot of discussion at that surrounding how that was going to look and the fact that they are borrow pits. I think, and he can speak to more to that, but they were created when the Primus tract was developed. But there is a permit that allows them to fill those for the most part. I think they would be required to keep some of it for some of their own drainage. But
okay. That's the only question.
And I heard those ponds have been there for like 20 years. So they're established ponds. And for me, you know, it goes against the comp plan and filling wetlands. I'm a big no.
Yeah. So I, oh, sorry, go ahead and say it.
Well, I wondered if we could take them, it's two things, to annex and to zone PD, but.
So I need actually three. So there's the annexation, there's the zoning for the plan development, and then there's an impact assessment and conceptual plan.
So we would need to.
So you need three different
separate votes.
And Planning Commission recommended denial for, they didn't review the annexation, but they recommended denial for the impact assessment, conceptual plan, and the PD zoning.
Okay, and yours was a motion to deny the PD.
The PD, yeah.
Okay, so that would be the first vote. So I did have someone from CAGE reach out to me and say that they did not object to this, but having seen what this is and the intense nature of this, given the comprehensive plan designated goal for this area, this and filling in almost 10 acres worth of pond does not seem like something I can support. So let's go ahead and vote on, unless there's any further discussion, this will be on the vote on the PD. Okay, all those in favor of the motion to deny, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right, motion to deny carries. Do we have a motion on the annexation?
I'll move for approval on the annexation.
Second.
We have a motion to approve and a second on the annexation. Is there any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Motion carries on a recommendation to approve the annexation. And then the final vote would be on approval of an impact. Wait, they don't have an impact assessment, but we...
They do have an impact assessment.
They do. Okay, so we... Need,
yes.
Okay, we have a motion on the impact assessment to approve or deny the impact assessment.
I'll move for to deny.
All right, we have a motion to deny.
Second.
And we have a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion to deny the impact assessment and conceptual plan. All right, that takes care of item 5A. Moving on to 5B, the point plan development.
Okay, this is the same in the fact that it is a request for a PD zoning, an impact assessment, and a conceptual plan, and partial annexation. Some of this is already annexed. So this is totaling about 9.37 acres. It would be zoned PD. It is on the corner of Bell Point and Long Point Road. Some of you might recognize that there's the Chick-fil-A at the corner. The property line actually doesn't follow that. So the Chick-fil-A is actually partially zoned AB, partially in the county. And so this would clean it up. It would bring in the county portions, annex it in, and it would zone it all PD plan development, including the Chick-fil-A. That would get absorbed into the plan development. These parcels are in the Mount Pleasant overlay. They have historically been used for light industrial uses. And in fact, previously it was used for the Van Smith concrete, and then it was used as a lay down for the port. And so what's proposed before you is a plan development that would have a mix of area-wide business uses and economic development uses. The community scale commercial, let me back up real quick. There's the comp plan. So the comp plan does recommend community scale commercial, which is appropriate for AB and ED uses. And so here is both kind of the zoning map for the PD and the conceptual plan. So we have all of the orange, and up at the corner would be where the Chick-fil-A is located. So all of the orange would be proposed AB uses, and the blue portions would be the ED uses. So a few things I wanted to talk about with all three proposals is the history, the interconnectivity, the commercial village standards, and then the parking. So again, you can see that it's cleared, it's been used for concrete, lay down yard. There is no trees or anything on the site. And here we see that next door we have Bell Station. So one thing that they are proposing, which has been planned for, is there's a stub out on the Bell Station site. So the developer would provide a connection to that site, and the Planning Commission did recommend approval with that condition as well, but they are proposing that connectivity, which would help circulation throughout the site. The community village design standards, this development would forego any internal buffers, which would promote pedestrian connectivity and street furnishings throughout the development. Right now, any commercial development is required to either maintain 160 inches on site, and if you don't have it, you have to plant it. So they would have to provide plantings. It just wouldn't necessarily be internal. So here's across the street. Obviously, you see the street trees, and so that would probably be sort of the visual that you have. But they would be required to plant 160 inches or pay into the tree bank up to the amount you see on the screen. One thing that is going to be a positive with this development is that it's going to provide surplus parking for Chick-fil-A. There has been issues with, obviously, you know, Chick-fil-A is busy all the time. They have issues with parking. And so it is proposed as part of this plan that they would provide surplus parking for Chick-fil-A. Because it's over and above the minimum requirement, it would be required to be pervious, which would meet one of our LID requirements. This is the transportation impact fees for this development if it goes through. Again, these are all proposed uses. They're not clearly defined, but they would have to meet the AB and the ED. A few things that the Planning Commission wanted to point out. They did recommend approval. They wanted to make sure that vehicular connectivity was there. They wanted to make sure it wasn't clearly defined, the street trees, so they wanted to make sure that it was clearly defined that the street trees would meet the town standards and meet satisfaction of the review. And then another one was all the economic development area. Our current ordinance says that if you're ED, you can go up to 55 feet in height. And so they have proposed that for that blue section, which is ED, which isn't appropriate if you can justify it through certain measures. Planning Commission was okay with the height, but they wanted to make sure it was limited to three-story buildings. And that's all I have. I'm happy to answer questions, and I know the applicant is here.
Yep. I'd like to move to approve with the Planning Commission's recommendations regarding height, plantings, and the interconnectivity.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Chapman?
This has been a very difficult area for the town. Having served on the Planning Commission a few years ago, at that time, it came to us with a much more difficult development proposed. This is much better, and I applaud the Planning Commission for their review and suggestion of what it needed for approval, but it is so much better than we saw 5 to 10 years ago.
All right, do we have any further discussion?
Yeah, this is gonna be really nice and help with the parking, and I think it's gonna make the whole area look a lot better, so nope, I'm ready.
All right,
There's no further discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Recommend to approve. Item number C, the Houston Northcutt Impact Assessment.
Real quick, Madam Chairman, is that the annexation, the PD, and the impact assessment?
The motion for all three?
Okay. Okay. See, moving right along, we have another impact assessment and conceptual plan for the Cinnabar redevelopment, which is right around the corner here. This is already zoned AB, area-wide business, so there is no proposal to rezone it. The proposed uses within the impact assessment meet the AB zoning designation. So this is about a 7-acre tract. As you can see here, this is part of a town-scale development for the comp plan. They are proposing 200,000 square feet, general office mixed with medical office. So that is an appropriate use in the town scale and in the AB zoning. Again, it is zoned AB. The site is currently not in use, but is improved with the Cinnabar structure, which is about 37,000 square feet. So the proposal for the impact assessment is for that multiple buildings. It would be done in phases, and it would also have a parking garage. And they would demolish that existing structure. Phase one would be 100,000 square feet of general medical office with all the surface parking, which would be 186 spaces. And phase two would be the remainder of the 100,000 square foot of office and then the 800 space parking deck. So a few things we wanted to talk about with this one, and the Planning Commission did recommend approval, was some LID opportunities, the buffer requirements, which were concerned by some of the neighbors, and then the phased parking plan. So this is a conceptual plan for this development. It would be three separate buildings. And we originally had a conceptual plan that showed the entrance a little bit further down, but they're going to be required by DOT to put a right turn lane in. So they had to move their entrance. So they did a great job of working with staff, and we were able to move some buildings around that we think DRB can approve and will meet the requirements of our commercial overlay standards and accommodate DOT in that right turn lane. So we have the 800 parking space off in the corner there, and then we have the two office buildings fronting the street. There is currently, let me go back a minute, you can see, and we'll show this in the future slides, but you can see that there's already a buffer there with a pond. And we'll get into that a little bit more. So there is an opportunity for some LID stuff here, particularly throughout the parking. There's going to be a lot of parking areas, and so we talked about that, and the Planning Commission had some recommendations for that. One of those was throughout the parking having some island bioswales. The important thing about having that is you want some contiguous green space, so we'd like to be able to work with the applicant to incorporate some of that. And DRB will likely want that too. They'll want those islands and those green spaces sort of contiguous so that they're more effective. The existing 50-foot undisturbed buffer, which is there already, there's about 8 single-family homes that are adjacent. And this was actually part of back in early 90s when the Cinnabar went in, there was an impact assessment, and that 50-foot buffer was part of that impact assessment, so that's why it's there today. The we received some correspondence, and some folks came, and they were concerned about that, and the developer has agreed to, they're not going to do anything with that buffer, they're going to leave it. What would be required under today's standards is a 25-foot with a fence, and so they're going to keep that 50-foot buffer there, and that's what it looks like on the ground. And so the neighborhood seemed to be pleased with that. So the applicant has agreed to keep that buffer there. Next, we have the phased parking plan. This is one of staff's comments. So if you, the phase one is to be 100,000 square feet of office and 186 surface parking spaces. If you go by our current requirement, 100,000 square foot office would require 333 parking spaces. So staff just wants to make sure that during the construction that as uses come on, that they can accommodate parking. And so they've agreed, and that was one of the conditions, that there is a phased parking plan that meets the requirements of the ordinance, and it meets staff's comments in that. Because we know that 186 is not going to meet that. And the 800-space parking garage would not come online until phase two. And last, we have our transportation impact fees, which were estimated based on general and medical office, which are outlined on the screen. And again, Planning Commission recommended approval with those conditions, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Do we have any questions from the committee or a motion?
I'll move to approve with the fence remaining on the commercial side of that buffer.
Second.
We have a motion to approve and a second. And Ms. Hyatt, does your motion to approve include the recommendations of the Planning Commission?
Yes.
All right. Okay. All right. So we have a motion to approve and a second. Is there any discussion?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Ms. Corley.
Sure. I just think this is one of those really cool opportunities for redevelopment and starting to see those LID options. So this is super exciting. I love the buffer. And good job with the phased parking.
Mr. Chapman?
I want to thank the developer for working with the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. That was a big concern I had going in, and they didn't have to, but they did. And that helped sway me on the proposal. So thank you very much, and I'm sure the neighborhood thanks you. Were they there at the Planning Commission to see and suggest they endorsed what the plan is?
Yeah, we had, I think there was one or two there, and of course there was written correspondence, but the developer stood up and said there is no plan to remove any of that, and that's perfectly fine. So
great, thank you.
Happy with that.
Yeah, my motion included, now that we require a fence, that it being on the commercial side, that the residents were happy for the buffer to stay, but they also wanted the fence to be on the commercial side, you know, not in their backyard, so then they would be blocked from the buffer if the fence went on the residential side. So that's why that was part of my motion, was to leave the fence. But what height is allowed there? Is it 55?
65.
65.
Yes.
So it's going to be tall.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay.
65. All right, we have a motion to approve in a second. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, motion carries. Moving on to item six, continued discussion and possible action on the short-term rental amendments. Before we begin, Michelle, it was raised by multiple people in public comment, but I thought that we had sort of addressed it with this exempt verbiage to try and it would exceed the cap. Could you please go into that a little bit?
Yeah. The first I heard of that concern was when Jane met with the group. So, yeah, it had already received first reading. I don't think it's interpreted that way. That's certainly not how it is written. I could see how it could be interpreted as, you know, exempt from the cap does not mean the cap doesn't exist. It exists. However, it's fine, and I was going to talk to legal about it, and if there's a way that we can clarify that language, that at town council final reading, make an amendment. So that's fine.
So we'll take care of that.
Yes, ma'am.
And so just for clarity's sake, the council has already approved the change in the administration side of things for allowing existing STR owners to apply early and then see what we have left over, if anything, and then it opens up to the other people. So first reading has happened on that. Second reading will happen next Tuesday. Right. And then the remaining issues we referred back to committee. Mm-hmm. And my hope was in this discussion to lay out kind of what all those issues are that were raised both by staff and by STRAMP and get an understanding of that. And then I would hope, and the committee feel free to disagree with me, that we have a more in-depth discussion next month once we have laid out kind of all the issues and have for staff have an opportunity to kind of go more in-depth with them. Does that sound palatable to the committee?
Yes, ma'am. I think the key is to get it underway so staff can make sure they comply with the numbers at the beginning. Not have to wait till we get done with this whole review of the ordinance, but to let the staff be able to comply with our requirement for 400, and second, that it starts for the existing applicants or existing permit holders and give them an opportunity up front to get in. But after that time period, number-wise, no more than 400.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. All right.
So just a few things. As you said, the primary thing with clarifying the cap, the language that's going through, that'll get final reading. Some of the outstanding things were brought up throughout the process. That was the two types of permits and then the increase in the fee. Staff, as we do many times when we're amending an ordinance and we see loopholes and gaps and things that needs to be fixed, we like to clarify it. And so the parking was one of them. We did add that in. We wanted to make sure that if you have an STR, you are respectful of your neighborhood, you're responsible, and you are accountable for how many cars show up and park there and are staying there. And we don't get very many complaints at all, but the few we get are for parking. The STR cannot accommodate off-street the number of cars that are staying there, and so they're parking on the street. And, you know, one of the main intents or purposes of this whole program was to allow this use while being respectful and responsible for your neighbors and for your community. And so we did add the parking requirements in. We thought it was important, and we still think it is. Another thing that was brought up through the process were the civil penalties. We do have a draft for that. That was to go after those folks that operate without a permit. And legal wrote that up, and it's drafted in the ordinance, and that could go through. And then the last that was brought up by the STR operators was this transfer of permit issue, which we've never transferred a permit, but legal reviewed it, and I think they have come up with some language here that would perhaps allow that. And if you have questions about that, I know David's here, can speak more to that provision they've drafted.
Could you please? Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, committee. What you see in front of you is a provision which would address the transfer of permits. Now, keep in mind, outside of this, to those of you who are familiar with the structure of limited liability corporations or some corporate entity and the like, there is a way that can be done. For example, if the property is in an LLC, you're not changing the deed holder or the title holder. You're simply transferring the ownership within that LLC. So that option is available. Now let's talk about transfer of title, and that's what this draft addresses. And I think there is the most restrictive, middle restrictive, and least restrictive. What you see in front of you is what I'd consider the most restrictive. And what that provides is that any property owner can add or have an additional person on title that is titled what we call joint tenants' right of survivorship. And what that means is if something happens to one owner, title automatically vests in the other. And of course, that would be limited to family members as defined at the bottom of the draft. So that is a restrictive way of doing it. There is also a way that we could change this language to, which would require adding to the title a family member as joint tenant right of survivorship, but being able to transfer during lifetime, meaning don't have to wait until somebody dies in order for that transfer to happen. So that'd be more of a middle ground, but would also require a change on the deed. The third part, which we looked at, which would be the least restrictive, would be very difficult to administer, but that would mean just getting rid of the title requirements and having a provision that says at any time you can transfer to a family member. All are feasible and all could be accomplished. I guess it just depends on where on the spectrum committee and council would like to land. So we can accommodate any or all of that. We can provide additional draft language for the next meeting if you care for us to do so.
Do we have any thoughts from the committee, Ms. Hyatt?
Do we currently allow two names on a permit, like a couple or?
Right.
Yeah.
So So this concerns people that haven't gotten a permit, including another family member or spouse. I mean, is there a way to have a window to correct that? Like with this this upcoming application, can they add a name like their spouse or child? And then moving forward, anybody that applies would have to include.
So you're suggesting allowing those who currently have permits to add a name, something similar to what you're looking at in this draft, mm-hmm. without having, it could be done. Yes, ma'am.
I mean, if we already allow like dual right. owners of a permit, like a married couple,
mm-hmm.
right. Or if two people that aren't married both own a house, mm-hmm. Jointly, right. then both names could be put on the permit.
Yes,
so we already do allow that.
Well, we don't allow, I mean, the permits are the permits as stated. If you want to add or adjust a permit, then we are typically restrict that. What you're saying is if there is currently a permit and you'd like to add a spouse, and I presume a family member as described in this ordinance, maybe not some third party,
right.
but that's for y'all to decide. Then we could write that in to existing for the benefit of existing permit holders. Yes, ma'am.
And then moving forward, it would still operate the way we do. So if a new person applies, they could apply jointly with for a permit, their spouse or child, and then their names would already be on there and taken care of.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I just wondered if we're already doing that, if we're allowing more than one person.
Ms. Quinn, are you thinking without having to add the name on the deed, or are you saying?
Well, I was asking if that's something we already allow, not really necessarily changing our policy, but if we already allow it and people just haven't thought of that they could have added their spouse, like are they afraid if the permit's in the husband's name and he passes away that he can't even let his wife hold the permit, you know?
But for example, the people that are worried about a son or daughter,
mm-hmm.
they would have to put that name on the deed before they can add to the permit. Is that what you guys were thinking? That's kind of what I was thinking.
That's something I was leaning towards, unless we already allow more than one name on a permit.
I think Jane issues a permit based on the property owner, correct?
Correct. So if tax records show one owner, even if you're a married couple,
okay, so we don't allow. Correct. Okay, that was my question. Yeah. Do we allow two names? Like a own it. Okay.
Right.
Okay, so we don't allow it.
What you would be suggesting is allow permit holders a period of time to add an additional family member or someone they'd like without having to go through the process after. Mm-hmm. I would suggest that if we did it this way, that would cure that problem anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. But we could do that. We could expand that as you see fit. And do keep in mind the last sentence, how we define immediate family member. I think that is certainly something that we'd like your input on as well. How expansive do we wish to be?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think having something in place where someone has to be on the deed for the dwelling, to me is almost even a key definition of an immediate family. Like I'm not going to put a total stranger on the deed to my house
mm-hmm.
and just to get a short-term rental permit, right? Like you're not going to add them as a joint tenant and right of survivorship. So, and I think the way that we define family in today's culture, it's defined in very, very different ways. You may have a boyfriend that you're never going to marry, mm-hmm. but they are maybe inheriting from you or with that kind of thing. So I lean towards the requiring the deed, like for someone to put a joint tenant with right of survivorship. And then I don't know how, I'm open as to how we define family member.
I am too.
Ms. Whitley, are you talking about this in the context, and I provided another option, which was during a lifetime. This draft sadly requires someone to die in order for that transfer to happen. There's also another way in which you could do that while they're actually living, as long as they are on that deed. And I think that's what you were saying, but I want to make sure I understand.
No, I think I'm comfortable with it happening upon the death of.
Okay.
Yeah. There we
go. Madam Chairman, one of the things I'm concerned about with whatever we do is there's currently an issue that I presume will be working through the courts on Sullivan's Island, where you have a LLC buying a parcel and then taking that parcel, whole LLC, and renting out individual, or selling essentially individual units within that parcel. And I want to make sure whatever we do, we solve that problem that is occurring or is proposed to occur on Sullivan's Island, and could eventually be coming to Mount Pleasant. So whatever we do, I want to make sure that is taken into account.
Mr. Chapman, I'm familiar with that issue, and I think that is actually a separate issue that I think we do need to address as we move forward with this.
Right.
Mr. Pagliari, would you agree with that, the whole fractional ownership issue?
It is. We're looking at that and monitoring that as well. At this point, if a property is owned by an LLC and it's a legal entity that is permitted to do that, and I think part of it is understanding the nature of LLCs. Those are governed by an operating agreement, which is not a filed document. It's not a public document. Of course, we could require one, but those things can change daily, weekly, monthly. So it is very difficult for us to monitor that. Of course, that should not get in the way of us making an effort to legislate how council sees fit. But we are looking at that. We are considering that as well.
Mr. Chapman, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that's more like a timeshare type thing. Yeah. They wouldn't be able to short-term rent it. But if seven owners own it and they each take, you know, so many weeks out of the year, I think that's what's going on there.
Yeah.
Because then if they were take their piece and short-term rent it during their time, then that falls under this ordinance. So it's kind of a timeshare thing, right?
That's how I understand
it. And I don't know if we even address that here in Mount Pleasant or have cared thus far.
The issue is if it starts to come here, because that's what's happening on Sullivan's Island. They're buying very high-end homes, and they're splitting it into eight sections. So the problem that I see with it, and I think this is where Mr. Pagliarini is going, we're going to have to work with Mr. Pagliarini on this, is we all love each other. We could buy a house together in an LLC, the four of us, and divide it into four sections, you know, and each have 3 months, and we own it in an LLC. And that's essentially what this company is doing, is making that scalable and connecting multiple people. But it's essentially doing what me and my family members and my extended family, we could all buy a house on Sullivan's Island and share it. And that's completely fine, and people do it all the time. There are lots of homes held in trust for families long term.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the question is how is this company different, and how can we distinguish that, and how can we capture that and prevent it and not capture what me and my extended family do, what we haven't done, but you know what I mean, like that we could do. So I think
that's right. It's going to be difficult in that context, where a group of people, as you mentioned, owning a home, whether it's individually or in an LLC, it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. But I think it's going to be very, very difficult to stop that.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's something we need to look at for sure. So I think, do you have enough guidance from us on the heritability component of, like, we want them added to the deed, joint tenants, right of survivorship? So then the other issue was the parking. I don't see any, I think that's perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. I think that's an issue for communities, for the long-term residents of communities. If there's parking issues, I think requiring the adequate off-street parking is fine. Is that okay? So I think on the parking issue, we're sort of aligned on that with staff's recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
We've already taken care of the exempt verbiage, the fees. I think for me, there are so many costs associated with this, and then potential enforcement costs, where if we had additional funds, we could do more with enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm comfortable
with an increase in fees to help accommodate that additional enforcement, which could then generate more, like with civil penalties. I think that's interesting to me. Committee, do you have any thoughts?
I do, and in the past, I have worked toward getting more enforcement capabilities for the planning department, not just for short-term rentals, but many other items that are part of our zoning ordinances. And so, you know, this is a relatively small amount for the amount of money that is being taken in with short-term rentals. So I'm comfortable with the fees that have been proposed, and in particular trying to get additional enforcement of our zoning laws, working with the police department. You know, police have a lot to do besides just enforcing zoning requirements. But right now, that's basically what's happening, because we have one person doing everything. We need more help.
Ms. Hyatt?
I was just going to say that when folks come up and say that we should factor out the cost and that should only be what the fees add up to, there's more involved in allowing short-term rentals in your town than just one employee. You know, our planning staff's been involved, police get involved, you know, so there's a lot more involved by allowing it. So I'm fine with what's proposed.
I mean, another option would be, and I don't know how, I mean, I'm sure people would not want that, is you make it progressive. You make it a percentage of what you rake in. So if you are taking in $200,000 a year on your short-term rental, then maybe your fee's $5,000, you know? And then if you're renting it, because this is where I think we have to figure out this balance, right? And maybe Stramp could give us an opinion on that at some point in time, is we could take away, because there was people concerned about the minimum number of days, but if we tie your permit fee to the number of days you rent versus with as far as like your income, your reported taxes, but then I don't know if that would incentivize people to like underreport what they are earning on their short-term rentals. So I think a flat rate is probably easier to administer.
Well, we're seeing that in other municipalities, and it's done through the business license office. So your business license is based on your revenue generated, right? So there are other municipalities that the entire short-term rental program is run through business license, and it's based on what you bring in. So
can we get more information
yes,
on that?
Absolutely.
Because if that would make an administrative thing easier on that side of staff, and if that would, and we would have to figure out the right number that would generate enough to support additional code enforcement and cover the cost of the program, and that could potentially take care of this date number of days of, like, maybe there's a minimum fee,
right?
And then it's progressive based on usage. So that would take care of this day limit issue that people are concerned about if they're only, you know. And then I know some other municipalities also have limitations on how many short-term rental permits an individual can hold.
Yes.
And so I don't know if, Ms. Hyatt, you're
we have many people who have multiple. So one way to limit it to is you only get one.
Or you only get three or something. We could do it something like that. Ms. Hyatt?
I was going to say, I brought that up when this conversation started a couple of years ago. And we just kind of glossed over it. I don't know if we thought it would be hard to enforce because you could have your wife have one and you have one and your oldest kid have one, you know. But I'm always of the mindset that you don't not make a rule because you aren't sure how if you'll be able to enforce it 100% of the time. But, I don't think one person should hold. When we have such a limit on how many are allowed, you know, it's just a matter of fairness. That we should limit how many one person can hold.
And then another thing that I've seen in multiple, and I think the state of Arizona just implemented this statewide, is they have a three strikes rule, where if you have a repeat offender on your short-term rental as far as noise or trash or nuisance or that kind of thing, like party houses type of thing, it's a three strikes and you're out and your permit gets pulled.
I think we have that.
Do we
it's
have that?
Three or four strikes, yes.
Is it? Okay.
Yep.
Okay. All right, does anyone have anything further, Ms. Corley?
So how big of the conversation is the short-term organization a part of? So, because I would like to get their input.
Well,
where do they fall into this?
Well, staff has met with them. I think Jane spent 3 hours with them a couple weeks ago hearing them out, and their concerns were what you've heard are they don't think the price should go up. They don't think there should be a limit on number of days. They think should be able to transfer it. They, you know.
With the new stuff, like the
They have our email addresses. They've communicated right. with mm-hmm. us, so we have an opportunity for Stramp to reach out to us and give us their feedback on
just on the new stuff that came out today.
Yeah, and I think we also have to recognize too that Stramp is an advocacy group for short-term rentals,
right.
and we also have to balance what they mm-hmm. what that group wishes to see with the needs of the greater community mm-hmm. who live in those communities long-term and maybe facing issues with their communities.
Yeah, so, of course, but. We do want to hear what they have to say as well.
Yeah. So next month, we'll bring back some examples of other municipalities that run it through their business license, and they base the fee on number of days rented, revenue. And then we'll bring back some numbers on how many people own multiples.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Moving on from item 6 to number 7, SC Building Code Amendments.
This, our building official is here as well to speak about this. It's really an update from the 2018 code. And Mr. Horn, if you want to mention.
Hello, William Horn, building official. So every 3 years, the state code updates and adopts the new code from ICC with the state. The state adopts it, and all the jurisdictions have to update their code on the three-year cycle. So we wanted to update it from the 2018 to the 21. We also tried to suggest a little bit of a change so that we don't have to automatically do this every year. It'll be in there. So we just have the we took out some of the different sections. Some of the sections on there, as you see, were even prior to the last one that we haven't updated. So we tried to streamline it some by making the suggestion on the first, is it on the other page?
Oh, sorry.
Yep, there you go. At the bottom to cover the most current version and cover all those separate sections in one group.
Do we have a motion?
Move for approval.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Right, motion carries. Is there anything else to come before this committee? Then we stand adjourned. 9:45.